to the Sussex County Council meeting of October 22nd, 2019. The first thing is to approve the agenda. Mr. Lawson?
Good morning, Mr. President. Good morning, members of council. I do have one important amendment to today's agenda under 130 public hearings. Change of zone number 18905 on behalf of W&B Hudson Family Limited. We can strike this from the agenda. This application has been withdrawn by the applicant. Planning and Zoning Commission accepted that withdrawal, so we will not consider that today.
Entertained motion to approve the agenda as amended.
Motion,
Mr. Wilson.
Second.
Second, Mr. Burton. Any questions? Take the vote, Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
Mr. Burton.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. We had the minutes of October 8th. Any questions, corrections, concerns? Hearing none, they'll stand approved. Reading the correspondence, Mr. Moore.
I have none, Mr. President.
Any correspondence from council? Correspondence from council. Public comment, Mr. Guy. Thank you, sir. Dell Jones.
Hi, my name is Adele Jones, and I'm a native Sussex County, and I was born and raised here. I come from a farm family from the southeastern part of Milford, so it was in the Sussex County part, and I'm here about the growth and overdevelopment of Sussex County. I've lived here all my life in Sussex County except for college. I did have to go away to finish up my bachelor's degree for college, and I got a degree in math education. Obviously, with a degree in math education, able to teach high school math, I had lots of job offers, but I came back to Sussex County because I love it here. I built a house in 1992 off Robinsonville Road in the Lewis Angola area. I got a 1 acre lot because I'm used to land. I didn't want my neighbor to be able to look in my windows just by standing at their windows. And I wanted a garden and so on and so forth. Since I've built that house, the development has just gone crazy. Tidewater Landings was put on Robinsonville Road a couple years ago. The road was tore up, Robinsonville Road, for years. It finally got repaved this summer. There is now flooding on that road. Before, we had one little spot that occasionally had water when it rained. Now, there's been numerous times that there's signs there, water on the road. The water's all the way across the road now that Tidewater Landings has been put in. This spring and summer, there was a company, I think they were called Solutions, out there surveying. IG will tell you, I contacted them several times about what they were doing. He told me, got back to me and said it was about the roads. Now I find that there's gonna be a new development out on Robinsonville Road, on the corner of Robinsonville Road and Webb's Landing Road, and I live on Webb's Landing Road. This development got approved. How many more developments are we going to have? Will there be any farmland left? Farmers have a limited amount of land. You don't want them to use pesticides, herbicides, and so on, but you're asking them to grow more and more crops on less and less land. Obviously, a developer can pay more for the land than a farmer can. Traffic. I understand on the weekends, especially in the summer, I know where I built, there's going to be traffic, but it's nonstop now. You sometimes have to sit through a light for 3 or 4 cycles of it to get through the traffic. This is affecting my quality of life, and I'm wondering, in my retirement, do I need to move out of Sussex County? Thank you.
Thank you, ma'am. Paul Rieger.
Good morning, Paul Rieger, 18171 Deer Forest Road. I missed the last couple of hearings, public hearings, pretty new ordinances with the manufactured homes in different areas and stuff like that. As my question is, and it came up to remove the part about the deed restrictions, and you removed it from the new ordinance or out of the code. Now, with everybody seeming to have a different opinion, or using it whatever's advantageous at the time during different hearings between Board of Adjustment, Planning and Zoning, and County Council. I thought that the precedent was set during the country, or the whatever lawn services, when the conditional use was denied based on, it seemed to be based morely on the deed restrictions and their covenants from the deed. And it would have more of an option of coming up during a conditional use hearing or a change of zone or something, the deed restrictions would come up and be brought out front. A lot of the Board of Adjustment cases, I doubt that it would ever come up unless it's specifically looked at. I don't understand is if a special use exception is coming up, a conditional use, is if we're putting up in a packet during different hearings, you have a copy of the deed, if the recorded restrictions are in there, why would we not want the planning and zoning to adhere if there's deed restrictions on a special use exception or an administrative variance, just to give the authority for her to override the deed restrictions for special use, considering you're moving some of these into permitted uses now in a just strictly director's approval. What is going to be the precedent going forward for deed restrictions? Are they becoming completely irrelevant? Are we going to adhere to them? Is it fair to deny one person one for one and allow the next one to go because we change? It just seems to be at the convenience which way we choose to do deed restrictions. So in the code going forward with the administrative variances and stuff like that, I don't see what the problem is for adhering to deed restrictions. I understand you're not going to enforce deed restrictions out there, but when it's a major issue to look for them and read them and say they're in there, get them changed first. It should be a standard practice, because now it just seems like everywhere we're going with deed restrictions, they're either accepted or not adhered to. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. Dan Kramer.
Dan Kramer. Last night at the Board of Adjustment, they brought up an issue about setbacks and what have you, and bad guys and good guys. Well, I said it before, I told you guys early on, you're doing the job backwards. So then the issue came up, oh, well, we're trying, and if the inspector goes out and sees a problem, then the zoning inspector goes out after the fact. Wait a minute. You got it backwards. Why don't you send either both of them out there at the same time? Because if you don't, the guy's waiting, and he's got the footer in there, get ready to go in. He may have it in the wrong location. Well, if the first guy goes out, he thinks it's the wrong location. Now they got to go back and bring out the other one. Wait a minute. Why don't you either bring both out or take the zoning inspector out there first to get the true setback to start with? You got this thing all backwards, and it needs to be straightened up.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Lawson.
Thank you, Mr. President. Today, we have a unique opportunity to hear from students from Beacon Middle School. Councilman I.G. Burton invited the Never Let Them Go campaign students to join us today to make a presentation. I'm going to invite Ms. Alicia Fletcher to come forward and begin the presentation. Welcome. Thank you very much for being here.
Hi, good morning, board. My name is Alicia Fletcher, and I'm here to introduce you to a group of Beacon Middle School kids who are part of an Odyssey of the Mind team. For those of you who aren't aware, Odyssey of the Mind is a creativity problem-solving team effort, and these kids last year participated in World Finals at Michigan State University and placed 21st overall in the world for their specific problem. While we were fundraising last year to prepare to go to World Finals, we did some beach cleanup locally in the Lewis Beach to the Lewis Yacht Club area. And while we were cleaning up the beach, we really were finding and noticing lots of balloon debris on the beach. And that was coming in the forms of whole balloons, pieces of balloons, the strings of balloons. And upon further research, we found out that this is a real problem and that balloons are really affecting our local marine and bird life. So Odyssey of the Mind is about solving problems, so I tasked my team with solving a real-world problem, but what can they do about this? So I am here to introduce you to my team. They call themselves Never Let Them Go, and they are going to come up one at a time and explain to you about their project. Thank you so much for having us.
Thank you for coming.
My name is Addison Bowman, and as Alicia was, I'm in seventh grade, and as Alicia was saying, our group's goal is to ban the release of bio and non-biodegradable balloons to protect farm life, wildlife, ocean life, and air life. We hope that the county can support us in our efforts to raise awareness about the harm that the balloon litter causes.
My name is Gina, and I'm in seventh grade. When a balloon is let go, it will blow away, only to burst and deflate and then return back to pollute the earth. Ribbons and strings cause entanglement and death to our marine and wildlife. Falsely marketed biodegradable balloons, latex balloons, sorry, contain chemicals and take years to break down. This balloon was found by one of our team members while surfing at the Cape Henlopen State Park beach. And this balloon was found when it fell down from the sky on one of the windshields of our team members' cars.
Hi, I'm Sophia Macero, and I'm in seventh grade. Millions of marine, air, and land animals die every year due to balloons. When a balloon falls from the sky down onto the land, an animal can mistake it for a jellyfish or another food source. When the animal consumes the balloon, it gets stuck in its digestive tract. If we stop the release of balloons, we can stop the cycle from repeating.
I'm Elijah Lawson, and I'm in eighth grade. We have big ideas for how to make the public more aware about how dangerous balloon releases are. So first off, we have cards for vendors to use at the point of sale with the customer to encourage them to use these balloons responsibly. And secondly, we have a sign that this is a prototype, and we will put these up on beach paths.
Hi, my name is Darcy Crotty, and I'm in the seventh grade. There are many alternatives to balloon releases that will not pollute the earth or harm animals. For example, we can use bubbles, pinwheels, or flags. For memorials or fundraisers, some good alternatives are planting trees, gardens, or building birdhouses.
I'm Stephen Hart. I'm in seventh grade, and I attend Beacon Middle School. I'm a member of Never Let Them Go. Our group supports Stephanie Hansen's draft Senate bill, which basically is telling you to not release balloons outside. We want to stop the intentional release of balloons outdoors. In the draft Senate bill, it says that if you release 5 or more balloons outside, you will be fined $500. But this does not include balloons for scientific purposes, hot air balloons, or balloons released indoors.
We would like to thank Mr. Burton and the County Council for your time this morning. We ask for your consideration to support our initiative.
Well, thank you all very much. That was a very good presentation. Maybe we should enroll in Odyssey of Mind sometimes. I think it'd help us. But,
Mr. President, can I make a remark on that?
Well, you certainly may.
Thank you. We have a farm out on Route 30 in Millsboro, and I'll tell you, we have found balloons on our property that were released part of a wedding celebration in Ohio. So it is a concern, and I commend you on your presentations this morning.
Very good.
I support this effort, and I think you guys did a really good job of presenting it. Well, I had a tough time with this one when I talked to your teacher, because balloons sell cars, right? And so we had to get over the fact that it was don't release them, right? And that's the real message, right? Is that it's the effect that it's having, not actually the balloons. And there are other alternatives. So So I wish you luck on getting this passed through. Thank you for coming.
Any more comments from council? Okay. Thank you for coming. Thanks for the presentation. It was very good, very informative. Thank you very much. And you're certainly welcome to stay if you'd like to, but you want to go back to school. I don't know what. The teacher probably wants you to go back to school. Mr. Lawson?
I'm going to back up one item. Mr. Burton, I know you and I had had a conversation about this initiative. I don't know if there's any direction to staff related to this campaign.
Yes. I would like to see this on next meeting, next week's agenda for a possible resolution, if we could add that to.
Sure.
I'm sure you can
add that, to the agenda, and we'll have that for your consideration. Excellent. Thank you. Okay. A couple items to get to, Mr. President. First is the recognition of retiree Mr. Jim Hicken, airport manager. I see Mr. Hicken has returned from his travels last week to join us. It's a pleasure to have him back. Jim retired a few days ago, and we're going to recognize him officially. We did have a official party here in the chambers, but we'd like to bring him back in front of County Council to recognize his services. The airport manager within the county is a very unique position. It's a high-profile position given the nature of the job that it entails. Day in and day out, the airport never stops unless there's the weather issues out there. And Jim has been with us for a number of years and finishing as the airport manager and business park manager, and has done a tremendous job, and something that we should recognize today. Over that period of time, Jim has administered millions and millions of dollars of grant money that has come from the federal government and state government for the improvements out to the airport. Over $21 million in FAA grant money for the improvements to the airport. He oversaw the expansion of the 500 feet of 422 runway. Now, that was a $7.5 million project just in and of itself. And of course, over the last few years, we've taken efforts to see the next 500 feet come to fruition, which is right in our line of sight. Led the efforts to establish the County Council's approved airport policies. When he came on board, we didn't have many policies, and we were lacking in some of those initiatives, and he did a wonderful job in getting those together. Conducted dozens of environmental reviews, including our recent assessment that saved the county nearly $100,000. He earned his accreditation as the American Association of Airport Executives as an accredited airport executive, led the rebranding of the Delaware Coastal Airport, and currently, or last week, up until last week, oversaw the Taxiway D project, which was a $6 million project, which will be completed next month. So it's a great honor to recognize Jim and his years of service. You know, Jim is also a retired Air Force military man as well, so he's given his life to this country and to this county, and I think he deserves a round of applause, and we have a plaque and tribute for his recognition. Mr. Hicken, please come forward.
Congratulations again.
Thank you.
How was your
class reunion? Good. Yeah, you've seen these before.
Yeah. Hold these here like this. There you go.
Go first.
Arthur?
I have to get, that box stand on. That's when I take a picture. They'll even.
One more. Take one more left question. I'll do one.
I'm going to draw a warm sketch.
Oh, I'll do two more.
Someday I'll be a warm sketch. I'm going to catch them all.
That's good for people who want different jobs.
Going good?
We're good. I'll keep it brief, but I mostly want to thank the council for all its support over the last 14 years. I couldn't have done all the things that Todd said I allegedly did without the council's support. So I just wanted to thank you for that.
Thank you very much for your service. Thank you.
Okay.
Give the man a few words.
All right. Thank you. Moving down the agenda, next item of business is the discussion and possible consideration of an ordinance with a very long title, which is commonly referred to as the Hotel or Lodging Tax Ordinance. I have a short presentation, Mr. President, for your consideration. Information was contained in the packet this week for County Council. And we'll go through the presentation. If there's any questions, by all means, feel free to interject. The background on this ordinance dates back a few years ago. Starting in 2018, the Delaware General Assembly approved the authority for Newcastle County to collect a lodging tax. Back in that General Assembly, there was not an initiative at that point to have the other two counties join. Fast forward to this past session in 2019, the General Assembly did approve, coincidentally, Kent County and Sussex County's authority to collect a lodging tax. The bill for the Sussex County ordinance is House Bill 228. It was sponsored by Speaker Schwarzkopf and Senator Hocker, among others. So, the ordinance that we are considering today is to levy up to 3% of the tax of a rent for the rooms in a hotel, motel, or tourist home. Now, those terms of art are specific because they are defined in Delaware Code, a hotel, motel, or tourist home. Hotel, motel are pretty self-explanatory. A tourist home is defined as any person who operates a place where a tourist or transient guest for consideration may obtain sleeping accommodations and has at least 5 permanent bedrooms. So a lot of times people refer to as tourist homes as your bed and breakfast type venues. To be clear, this does not include short-term rentals, your Airbnbs, VRBOs, and et cetera. Currently, those aren't collected in a statewide effort by Delaware. There are municipalities, especially local municipalities, that do have a short-term rental on the books, but this does not apply to that. It only applies to venues in unincorporated Sussex County, so hotels and motels in Sussex, not within the municipalities of Sussex County. That's one difference that you may compare the enabling legislation from the General Assembly with the other counties. It does require this body to enact our own ordinance. So like most things with Delaware, the authority stems from state law, and we have the ability now with the passage of this legislation to enact our own ordinance and define the terms of that ordinance, and that's what we're here to discuss today. Okay. I want to be very clear about the legislation that passed from the General Assembly. It was not broad in the sense that we can collect the tax and spend it on anything. The projects that the county is able to spend this tax on are defined. It's defined in the legislation, and it'll be defined in this ordinance. And it's for the capital and operating cost of these 7 project type categories, which is exactly what it is spelled out in the legislation. Number one, beach nourishment. Number 2, waterway dredging. Number 3, economic development. 4, tourism programs. 5, recreational activities. 6, water quality projects. And 7, flood control projects. There is the permission to use up to 5% of the funds on administration costs because the county will be collecting this tax if this ordinance passes, and then expending the funds and in some way administering the projects that you see here. Okay, since the General Assembly finished in the summer, staff has been working on preparing for today. We have gone through the qualified venues here in Sussex County, and there are nearly 40 or over 40 venues in unincorporated Sussex County that do qualify. Ms. Jennings conducted that research and has that list. The way this works, if the ordinance is approved, there will be a collections methodology. What we will do at this point in time is collect via a voucher. We're developing a portal on our website whereby folks would go on and submit their voucher and their payment monthly. I say that because staff has also been in contact and discussions with the state and Secretary Geisenberger, because they are undergoing an upgrade to their software for the state collection of taxes. And in that first cycle of upgrades, the accommodations tax that the state collects currently is going to receive a software upgrade. Therefore, it is our hope that the state will couple this lodging tax and the other two counties' lodging taxes with that collections process. So in the future, it will be all done electronically and not via voucher, and also the honor system. So if we do approve this ordinance, the thought would be to start collections in January of 2020, so in a few months. Finance director predicts that the revenue will be around $1.3 million per year. And that funding will be placed in a lockbox here at the county level and will be controlled by Sussex County, and any future expenditures will be decided by this county council during our normal budget consideration. So what are our steps today? We would introduce this ordinance today if you see fit, and then we would schedule a public hearing in the very near future. I would predict that would happen in November, but at this point, I've given you the background on today's ordinance. County legal staff drafted the ordinance that we put in your packet today. So it is prepared for introduction if you see fit. And with that, okay. I'll entertain any questions.
Any questions from council? If Mr. Moore, whoever, read a short title.
Okay, thank you, Mr. President. An ordinance to amend Chapter 103, Taxation of the Code of Sussex County, to include a new Article 6, Roman numeral sections 103-39 through 103-42, which shall permit the imposition of a local lodging tax of no more than 3% of the rent for any room in a hotel, motel, or tourist home in the unincorporated areas of Sussex County.
Introduction, anybody?
I'll introduce it.
Mr. Burton introduced it. Thank you. If we could just hold you up, Mr. Lawson, just a second.
Very good.
Let's go to our 10:30 scheduled public hearing.
Good morning. This is an ordinance to address the current applications that go to the Board of Adjustment as a special use exception. We're looking to make them go through an administrative process. There are three types of applications that this would affect: is the garage studio apartments, medical hardships, and manufactured home type structures used as commercial or industrial or business uses. Typically, they require a public hearing, a fee of $400. They go through all of the Board of Adjustment process to determine whether or not it will substantially adversely affect the neighboring uses and properties. This ordinance would make them go through an administrative process where the adjacent property owners would still be notified. They would have the ability to provide information and provide if they're in support or in opposition. If there's an opposition, then they would be able to submit that letter, and then they would be required to go through a full public hearing. We thought this would be a time saver for and reduce the burden on the applicants going through this process. The Planning and Zoning Commission did hold a public hearing on September 26th of this year. At that public hearing, they did recommend approval. And if Mr. Moore would like, I can read the title.
Yes. Before we read the title, this is part of a public hearing, and it's part of the public hearing process. We've just heard a short presentation by the Director of Planning and Zoning. Council will have an opportunity to ask questions of Ms. Cornwell. Subsequent to that, it will be open for a public hearing, so any member of the public can come forth, give us your name and address, and comment on this. Subsequent to that, council may choose to close the public hearing and the public record and take action. And was there any questions from council?
Questions?
I got it.
One.
Mr. Burton. So the medical hardship involves what? What is a medical hardship? And who verifies that? You?
A doctor verifies that. We get a letter, an affidavit from a physician stating there's a need for a second manufactured home to be placed on a property due to somebody's medical needs. And then once it's no longer needed, that medical need no longer exists, the manufactured home is removed. And at an annual basis, they provide documentation from the physician stating that the medical need still exists.
Like, what's an example of a medical need?
We've had some people who've, you know, had physical disabilities, or we have some people who are aging and they have some medical issues. They can still live on their own, but they need to be checked on a little bit more closely. So they're independent, but they need a little bit more assistance. So we'll have some of those. We try not to get into exact details of persons, but we do get information that saying that there's a need. Sometimes, you know, the physical disability where, you know, the family members just need to take care of the additional family member, but they want their space so they can take care of themselves, but with an extra eye on them.
And all the setbacks and everything?
Everything else comply. They have to comply, correct.
And it's a time limit. It's a 2-year time limit.
But it can be renewed on an annual basis. So we do have some medical hardships that have been going on for a number of years, and every once in a while a medical hardship does cease, so the manufactured home is removed.
Okay. More questions to council?
With the name,
Mr. Riley.
Mr. President, thank you. Would the neighbors have any recourse at all? I mean,
yes. So just as currently, this would follow our administrative variance process. Adjacent neighbors would be notified. They have 10 written days to provide back documentation once we send them a letter saying they have either an objection or no objection. If we receive no objections, we process the application. If we receive an objection, we would contact the applicant and tell them they'd need to pay the additional fee to go to the Board of Adjustment.
Okay. More questions? Okay, we're good.
Now, it's hard to prove.
It's true.
Yeah. Now is the opportunity for any member of the public that would like to address this issue to come forward. Come on forward, please.
First thing is just for the code. Is there going to be an age restriction on the mobile homes that can be placed on the property during the mental hardship? Also, too, is like when they're coming in for 2 years, does that require, going back to other questions that were asked to planning and zoning about the other one, is this going to require with all peers be put in to meet full complete specs of if it was a new residence, or can it just be temporary repaired for the 2 years to keep costs down? If it plans on leaving, gonna have to be skirted, non-skirted, everything in that regulation. Not just saying that we're gonna follow code, what specifically is planning and zoning gonna look for, like on an inspection? What is it gonna need to be there for that time frame? Also too, just a question of my own, and this pertains a little bit with deed restrictions. If you do a garage studio apartment or a mobile home coming in for it, does that count as like a separate residence, or is it just as classified as like an accessory use, like a barn? Does that, if the deed restriction says only one residence on the property, are we gonna allow, is that fall under where it's not a resident and it's allowed with the deed restrictions stated? Is that just gonna be overlooked on the administrative variance, or is it just, where are we going with this? This all ties into what I've been speaking about for a while. And Mr. Burton brought up the medical hardship. With the issues that come in, and it just seems like growing up and seeing it, you saw it with the disability issue, a minimal thing, somebody comes, goes in, wants to collect disability, goes back and forth, gets it, you can't prove a sore back or something like that, there may be some abuse in that. But if we're getting into the social, mental impacts of a medical issue and stuff, you have mental issues coming up that can be so minor, what constitutes, where is the cutoff for a medical issue? Is, because you can have, where you're saying it's only temporary or you're looking at it, but if you have, say, one of your siblings, child, whatever, which you're not a child no more, if they're looking to move out on their own, if they have any sort of therapy, does that automatically constitute a medical reason to be able to put on a separate mobile home on your property for to give them an apartment to live in, or do they stay in the house? Where is the cutoff for Janelle to take that? Also, too, is there, like, garage studio apartment, I believe, in the code is set up at 800 square feet. Is the mobile home going to have to be smaller than 800 square feet to match the garage studio apartment size? It's just we keep writing these ordinances. We're doing a good job. And more coming out of the Board of Adjustment, I believe it can be done by planning and zoning if the guidelines are set correctly. But there just seems to be open-ended discretion on what's allowed, not allowed. So it comes back to, like, I was discussing with deed restrictions. If you consider deed restrictions important in a case, but then the planning and zoning director doesn't believe that they're important at all, shouldn't even be looked at. Where do we put, what can we put in the ordinance to have for this size? Is it a residence? Definition for a medical hardship, just to clarify. Because you can have somebody who puts a 20, 21-year-old relative, son, daughter, something in that nature, and do the mobile home. You have a medical, who knows what the medical doctor would write the excuse for. Just what is allowed? If you say it can be as minor as somebody who may have, like, a therapeutic issue, saying they need to have a cat, but you have parent, no, I want the cat and the single wide, go get a single wide, put it on a lot, and you go live there with the cat, and you're still part of the family here. Is that a medical hardship because the doctor says that that cat is a therapeutic animal? Is that a hardship? Because you know that that's a medical hardship, that they're going to be there for eternity. It's just things where when you go to Board of Adjustment and you listen to different reasons and different things, and you look at what can and will happen, you see this. So I just hope that you take the time and write that. And the main thing is, if you have good, with the definition of garage studio apartment with 800 feet, do you have to change that too? Thank you.
We'll let Ms. Cornwell or Mr. Roberts address his question if there are no more questions. But I would say while you're walking back there, Mr. Rager, that the medical issue, I think, is if a doctor sends in a note or a letter that says they need this because of a law called HIPAA, they're not going to tell you what's wrong with that person. They can't tell you what's wrong with that person. So there's no way you can write a code so tight there's got to be certain things. Ma'am?
So just for clarification, this proposed ordinance is not changing how a garage studio apartment works, how a medical hardship works. It is just changing the process. And that's all this is, taking it from a full public hearing to an administrative process. So nothing else is really changing in the code. It's just how the application is processed is what's being addressed with this ordinance.
With regard to the deed restriction question, that's why we're sending out notice to the adjacent property owners, just like if they're having a public hearing at the Board of Adjustment. You know, we had this come up at Planning and Zoning one time, and sort of I think the best way it was said is that the county is not in a position to enforce deed restrictions because they're contractual. But if they're part of the record, we can't ignore them either. If somebody comes up and says that we have deed restrictions that prevent manufactured housing on this property, that would be part of the record. So that's why the notice is sent out to the adjacent property owners. If they have deed restrictions that are enforceable, they could object, and that would put it into the Board of Adjustment process, and that would become part of the record. So okay. It's taken into consideration. We're just not in the position of enforcing them ourselves.
Okay. Thank you for addressing those.
Wait, I got one more question.
What about the skirting and all that?
None of that's changing.
None of that changes.
None of that changes. Again, this is just from going from a public hearing process to an administrative process to process those applications. Everything else remains the same. Everything has to get the normal permits, go through the normal processes.
How many of these do we see a year?
We see about less than a dozen, about a year.
Thank you.
I think we got no quite, Mr.
Yes.
I think Mr. Kramer is going to come up.
My name is Dan Kramer, 8041 Scott Store Road, Greenwood. All right, I'm going to follow up on that trailer issue. Can it be a travel trailer? Can you park a travel trailer for a hardship? Pure and simple. What's the difference? And now on your studio apartments, you guys just passed somebody's property to allow them to have 15% of the studio apartments. After they're done, somebody comes along in that same development and says they want a studio apartment. Can she, or I'll rephrase that, can the director do that automatically? Because, and override, because you guys just said 15%, that's all it can be allowed. So now can it be more? And I can't even read my own writing, but that's not unusual. I do that every day. Then my wife raises a holy cane with me, because I'm asking her to tell me what I wrote. So anyhow, but there's still some real questions on whether, this is just, everything stays the same. You're trying to sell, but I ain't buying. And because there's too many open doors here that need to be closed and changed, just like that trailer. And by the way, talking about hardships and doctors, go ahead here and look. Sit at a Walmart sometime and watch the handicaps coming in. They ain't handicapped. They're handicapped in the brain, but they ain't handicapped. Thank you.
Yes. Is there anyone else that would like to address the issue? Any issue? Anyone else that would like to speak? If not, Mr. President, we can close the public hearing on this matter, and if council desires, close public record.
Okay, close public hearing?
Yes.
And public record? Everybody's good?
You need to see it.
Mr. Moore, read short talk.
Ms. Cornwell has graciously volunteered to read the short title.
This is an ordinance to amend the Code of Sussex County, Chapter 115, Articles 4, 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10, 10A, 10B, 11, 11A, 11B, 11C, 11D, 11E, 11F, 12, 13, 14, 15, and 27 by amending all Roman numerals, by amending Sections 115-20, 115-23, 115-29, 115-32,
a little bit slower.
115-40, 115-48, 115-53, 115-56, 115-64, 115-69, 115-72, 115-75.2, 115-75.4, 115-75.9, 115-75.11, 115-80, 115-83.6, 115-83.11, 115-83.13, 115-83.18, 115-83.20, 115-83.26, 115-83.28, 115-83.33, 115-83.35, 115-83.40, 115-83.42, 115-88, 115-94, 115-97, 115-105, 115-114, 115-210, and Table 4 to establish administrative approval process for the use of a manufactured home type structure for business, commercial, or industrial use, for garage studio apartments, and manufactured home type structures in an emergency or hardship situation.
Can you repeat that?
I'm glad we're not changing it.
Good job. Who said we haven't got enough rules? Yeah. Anyone want to make a motion?
I'll make a motion.
Motion, Mr. Riley.
Second.
Second, Mr. Hudson, to approve the ordinance as read by Ms. Cornwell. Questions on the ordinance? We'll take the vote. Mr. Hudson.
Yes.
Mr. Riley.
Yes.
Mr. Wilson.
Yes.
Mr. Burton.
Yes.
I vote yes. Motion carried. Thank you, ma'am.
Thank you.
Thank you.